Hello, this is Sandra Ferguson with the Friday, October 11th, 2019 edition of the News Gazette. And we'll begin on the front page with a piece called He's Here, a Bigger, Badder Butkus, a piece about Illini football, a legend returns. Statue unveiling today, ABC in town Saturday, by Matt Daniels, Champaign. If you can't catch Dick Butkus in person this afternoon, you'll have a chance to get up close with the Illini football legend's likeness Saturday. The newest sculpture at Memorial Stadium, honoring the Hall of Fame linebacker, will be unveiled during a 2 p.m. public ceremony today, the eve of Butkus's alma mater's ABC televised showdown with number 16 Michigan. Fans coming to town for the 11 a.m. kickoff will be able to pose for selfies with, take photos of, even touch the 12-foot, 1,000-pound bronze replica if they'd like. The sculpture is already at its new home, the Henry Dale and Betty Smith Football Center on the east side of the stadium, but was covered under a big blue tarp on Thursday. George Lundeen, a University of Illinois alum who also created the Red Grange statue on the west side of the stadium, shared photos of the finished product with News Gazette media last week. In true Butkus fashion, Lundeen's statue portrays number 50 with his familiar, menacing scowl. Butkus, 76, is expected to give remarks at today's ceremony. He'll be joined by UI officials and Matt and Sarah Joyce, UI graduates, who provided a gift that helped pay for the sculpture. Free parking will be available for today's ceremony at State Farm Center. 4th Street will be closed from Kirby to Pennsylvania Avenue for the event. And the next piece is called Drawing a Crowd. News Gazette Media salutes members of its 12th 40 Under 40 class. By Anthony Zillis, Champaign. Hundreds of people packed a conference room at the Hilton Garden Inn on Thursday to salute the young entrepreneurs, professionals, and community service workers who make up News Gazette Media's 12th 40 Under 40 group. The 2019 Woman of the Year, Giselle Rodriguez of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, said in her speech that the award brought affirmation after coming to Champaign from San Lorenzo, Puerto Rico, to pursue her master's degree. "Never in a million years dreaming about my future on my long bus rides to school did I imagine that I would be here today," she said. "This award is very special to me because it feels like it is the ultimate confirmation that I'm not a stranger to this place anymore, that I do belong, and that this is home." Both she and Man of the Year, Selvo Rodriguez, the Director of New Business and Campaign Development for the United Way of Champaign County, urged those in attendance to give back to their community. "I want to encourage everyone here today to consider volunteering just 2 hours a month," he said. "While the impact of this commitment may seem small, I can assure you that it'll mean the world to someone who will benefit from your generosity and your service." And the next piece is from the University of Illinois, Review Ordered After Mideast Presentation Sparks Arguments, by Julie Wirth, Urbana. A residence hall presentation on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict led to complaints of anti-Semitism at the University of Illinois, prompting a campus review and an apology from Chancellor Robert Jones. The chancellor issued a statement late Wednesday denouncing anti-Semitism following that incident and Monday's discovery of a swastika in the UI's Foreign Languages building. "Bias and prejudice are antithetical to the educational foundations of our university and hurtful to our entire community. The idea that any individual feels threatened for expression of personal, religious, or ethnic identity is unacceptable," Jones said in the email. The September 25th presentation was based on the Palestinian perspective, and student groups aligned with Israel and Palestine had very different reactions Thursday to the chancellor's statement. In his mass email to campus, Jones said a student raised concerns about anti-Semitic content at a staff development program for residence hall advisors, which included 11 RAs and one full-time housing staff member. It was part of a program to help students learn to share diverse perspectives that lead to new understanding, he said. Instead of fostering dialogue, it incited division, distrust, and anger. The program allowed our students to enter an extremely challenging and potentially volatile situation without the preparation, training, education, and professional oversight they needed to succeed. This is inexcusable and unacceptable. This is a failure to our students, and that is my responsibility, Jones said. The chancellor's email didn't include details about the presentation, but it was later shared online, titled Palestine and Great Return March, Palestinian Resistance to 70 Years of Israeli Terror. It made a distinction up front between anti-Zionism, opposition to the State of Israel or its actions, and anti-Semitism, the stereotyping or persecution of Jewish people. It presented the history of the conflict from Palestinians' perspective, showing maps of their dwindling territory since 1948 and photos of Palestinians crowded into Israeli checkpoints and the miserable living conditions in Gaza. It also equated Israel's actions with apartheid in South Africa and 1940s-era Jim Crow laws in the United States, and showed photos of martyrs for the Palestinian cause. Housing Director Alma Seline said one of the RAs at the meeting was concerned and shared his views with another student who used to live in the building. That student then filed a complaint, she said. The presentation was one of many given by multicultural advocates who share information on topics related to diversity and inclusion as part of an ongoing staff development program, she said. They play an important role in educating residence hall staff about the identities students bring to the residential experience, from race relations to body image to feminism to LGBTQ issues, she said. The goal is to do it in a safe environment where people can ask questions or respectfully disagree. In this instance, she said, it would be important for them to also talk about what is the Israeli viewpoint as well, she said. Some individuals don't feel that that happened. Housing has followed up with all of those who were at the event, as well as the person who filed the complaint, Seline said. We're working on some additional training for our staff and making sure that our multicultural advocates are not perceived as experts on any given topic. And we also make sure that we take the time to identify all sides of an issue, she said. Jones said the campus is instituting anti-Semitic training for all full-time housing staff, resident advisors, and multicultural advocates by the end of the semester, launching an immediate full review of the hiring, training, and professional oversight that management of resident advisors and multicultural advocates, commissioning an external review of UI Housing's multicultural educational programs to help us identify and to implement best practices based on leading national peers. He also promised the campus would continue to track incidents of anti-Semitism, racism, bias, and prejudice on campus. We will always recognize the rights of those on the campus to safely and freely express their perspectives and opinions, but we will also be ready to condemn statements and actions that violate our shared values and seek to demean, intimidate, or devalue others in our community, he said. I apologize to all of our students and to our community. This university promises an experience that prepares students to live, work, and lead in a multicultural, diverse, and international society. We did not live up to our obligations in this case. UI Professor Bruce Rosenstock, who teaches a course on the history of anti-Semitism for the Jewish Culture and Society program, applauded the Chancellor's efforts to increase staff knowledge about that topic. But he also hopes it includes diverse views about the State of Israel. Jewish organizations on campus welcomed the Chancellor's statement. "This is a step in the right direction," said Rabbi Dovid Techtel of Illini Shabbat. "Anti-Semitism has been an ongoing challenge," he said, "from swastikas to vandalism of Shabbat's outdoor menorah in years past. But the UI chapter of Students for Justice in Palestine was disappointed by the Chancellor's statement, saying it demonizes a student presentation on Palestine and equates the concept of anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. The group demanded that any training make a distinction between the two. "We firmly believe that everyone has the right to criticize the unjust actions of a state, and we wish to highlight the differences between what students in the Palestine movement are often accused of perpetuating as opposed to what they are actually fighting for," the group said in a statement signed by a dozen other student organizations. Students for Justice in Palestine unequivocally condemns anti-Semitic violence, such as the reported swastika on the foreign language building. "We extend our solidarity to Jewish students on campus who are impacted by this violent and anti-Semitism. SJP is committed to the struggle of ending all forms of discrimination," the statement said. It also said the role of multicultural advocates is to help raise awareness about marginalized groups and information about the Israeli occupation of Palestinian territories is well within that scope. But the Illini Public Affairs Committee, a group that works to strengthen ties between the U.S. and Israel, said it was inappropriate to push one-sided political messaging about a complex topic at a mandatory staff meeting. The group's main grievance was that the presentation labeled Israel as a terrorist nation and, as a result, did not facilitate any sort of conversational pieces of information for both sides of this very complex political debate. Illini PAC said the multicultural advocates are supposed to generate productive conversation on cultural issues, noting that the housing website says they should serve as role models by confronting acts of intolerance and hate, encouraging dialogue among students, and working toward the creation of truly inclusive communities. Instead, the incident created a hostile environment for residents based on their national origin or identity, the group said. And we'll turn now to the opinions page, and we'll begin with an editorial called "Delay Only Raises Questions. Senate President John Cullerton Should Heed the Advice He's Getting from Prominent Democrats." State Senator Martin Sandoval, Democrat from Chicago, is the subject of increasing scrutiny from federal investigators. But he's not the only one getting a lot of heat. So is Sandoval's Democratic colleague, Senate President John Cullerton, who so far has resisted calls to remove Sandoval from his position as chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee. Republican Senate Leader Bill Brady this week called for Cullerton to take action. "Given the seriousness of this matter, and in order to protect the interests of Illinois residents, I believe he should be removed from serving as chairman of the Transportation Committee, or any committee," Brady said. But it's not just Republicans who are spotlighting Sandoval's legal problems. So are Democrats. Last week, Governor J.B. Pritzker called for Sandoval's removal as chairman. He suggested that Sandoval's key role as a committee chairman, overseeing the state's ongoing $45 billion infrastructure building program, puts it under an ethical cloud. Pritzker has since been joined by other prominent Democrats, including Comptroller Susana Mendoza, and legislators who have suggested that if Sandoval does not step aside, Cullerton should remove him. I think everybody that serves in this dome and outside looking in should be very concerned about these allegations, and he should do the right thing and step aside, Mendoza said. Meanwhile, circumstances appear to be getting worse for Sandoval. The FBI recently raided his residence and offices in a search for evidence in connection with what has been characterized as a construction-related bribery scheme. Hitting the news Thursday was a report that Commonwealth Edison, along with parent Exelon, received a grand jury subpoena October 4th, requiring production of records of any communications with certain individuals and entities, including Illinois State Senator Martin Sandoval. The information was disclosed in a company filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Raising further intrigue is that it's the second subpoena the companies have received in recent months. They already are enmeshed in an investigation involving the relationship between their lobbying activities and the potential hiring of associates of Democratic House Speaker Michael Madigan as lobbyists. Indeed, Chicago, Cook County, and Springfield are enmeshed in a series of federal investigatory actions that may reflect separate investigations or be a part of a single massive investigation involving multiple prominent and powerful politicos at the municipal, county, and state levels. In that context, removing Sandoval from his committee chairmanship appears to be a relatively small thing. That's why Cullerton's refusal to act, he says he wants more information, is increasingly hard to fathom. President Cullerton removed State Senator Thomas Cullerton from his chairmanship of the Senate Labor Committee after his cousin was indicted in connection with a ghost payroll scheme with the Teamsters Union. Sandoval, of course, has yet to be formally charged. But federal criminal investigations don't get this far into the public eye without indictments on the horizon. Cullerton's curiosity about what's going on is understandable. But if he thinks the feds are going to give him a tutorial in which they explain what they are up to, whom they have targeted, and why, he's certain to be disappointed. Besides, Cullerton knows enough already. Sandoval, through his committee chairmanship, was a key player in passing the infrastructure program. He's under investigation for allegedly enriching himself in connection with construction projects. That's bad enough. But there's also his long-standing reputation as a marginal character who would do just the sort of thing he's apparently under investigation for doing. The longer Cullerton refuses to make the obvious move, stripping Sandoval of his chairmanship, the greater the question and speculation will be about why Cullerton is showing such deference to a fellow Chicago Paul who doesn't deserve it. And we'll take a look at the From Our Readers section now, and we'll begin with the piece written by Donald Webbles of Urbana, called Humans Causing Climate Crisis. Let's be clear. The Earth's climate is changing rapidly, and it is not changing because of natural cycles. While that was true in the distant past, the changes in climate occurring now are almost entirely due to human activities, namely our burning of fossil fuels and land use change. This is not just my conclusion. It is the conclusion of the hundreds of scientists involved in the U.S. National Climate Assessment and many other national and international assessments of the science underlying our changing climate. For the fourth U.S. National Climate Assessment, go to Science 2017, a report required every 4 years for Congress through the U.S. Global Change Act and signed into law by President G.H.W. Bush in 1992, the scientists preparing this assessment were selected by 13 major federal agencies, i.e. NASA, NOAA, NSF, USDA, DOE, EPA, the Department of State. They concluded that it is extremely likely that human influence has been the dominant cause of the observed warming since the mid-20th century. For the warming over the last century, there is no convincing alternative explanation supported by the extent of the observational evidence. There is no debate at all about this in the science community. Yet Alan Batts repeated the often stated canard about natural cycles in his comment in the News Gazette on October 8th. Climate change is one of the most important issues of our time and should be taken very seriously. And that again was written by Donald Webbles of Urbana. And the next piece is written by Dave Schwenk of Urbana, and it's called Donald Trump Should Be Removed. During the infamous telephone call, President Donald Trump asked the Ukraine president to look into horrible things done by Joe Biden and apparently dangled military aid as a carrot to do so. If that wasn't bad enough, Trump also brought up CrowdStrike. CrowdStrike is the cybersecurity firm that said Russians hacked the DNC's computer server, stole documents, and gave them to WikiLeaks, who then released them to the public, all of which has been confirmed by U.S. intelligence. In spite of this confirmation, it appears Trump was pressuring the Ukraine president to investigate and disavow CrowdStrike's Russian findings. The Mueller report, 8 U.S. intelligence agencies, and both parties on Capitol Hill are all in consensus that, as Dan Coats, Trump's former director of national intelligence, said, Russia conducted an unprecedented influence campaign to interfere in the U.S. electoral and political process. And the first sentence of the Mueller report says, the Russian government interfered in the 2016 presidential election in sweeping and systematic fashion. Most recently, the acting DNI, during congressional testimony, said our greatest challenge is to maintain the integrity of our election system. Still, Trump has repeatedly denied Russian interference in the 2016 election, tried to obstruct the Mueller investigation a dozen times, and actually defended Russian President Vladimir Putin on the national stage in Helsinki. As he actively seeks foreign help with his election campaign, Trump is obviously not defending the sovereignty of our elections, nor our Constitution. Trump needs to be impeached and removed from office. And that again is written by David Schwenk of Urbana. And next, from the Champaign County Environment and Land Use Committee, Panel Postpones Decision on Cannabis Business Support by Tim Mitchell, Urbana. The future of recreational marijuana businesses in unincorporated areas of Champaign County might be in the hands of whoever County Board Chair Geraldo Rosales decides to appoint to the board next week. On Thursday, Champaign County's Environment and Land Use Committee debated taking a first step toward allowing cannabis dispensaries, transporters, craft growers, cultivation centers, infusers, and processors in certain zoning districts. The committee typically has 7 members, but is currently down to 6 because of the resignation of Tanisha King Taylor from the county board. Republican Jody Eisenman argued against allowing the marijuana businesses. I don't think it is in the best interest to have it, Eisenman said. I am trying to do what is best for the children. Last year it was illegal, but in 2020 you can get high. There is less to regulate if we opt out of it. Democrat Stephanie Furtado offered an opposing viewpoint. Folks in these areas are getting to be using the product, are going to be using the product, Furtado said. There are only going to be so many licenses. When it became apparent that its vote was headed for a 3-3 tie, the committee decided to postpone the decision until November, presumably after Rosales names King Taylor's replacement with the full county board's approval. If a text amendment allowing certain cannabis businesses is approved in November, Champaign County Zoning Administrator John Hall said the proposal would next go to the Zoning Board of Appeals for a public hearing. In other business, the committee also unanimously recommended approving a recreation and entertainment license for the Illini BMX motocross racing on 5 Saturdays at the county fairground. And next, bond set at $200,000, hold-up suspect arrested, arraigned, by Mary Shank, Urbana. A man wanted in an alleged hold-up earlier this summer was arrested Wednesday. Savion Adorno, 19, who listed an address in the 2000 block of Cynthia Drive in Champaign and another in the 300 block of Marco Drive, Rantoul, was arraigned Thursday on charges of armed robbery and aggravated robbery in connection with the July 29th incident in Champaign. A Champaign police report said that on that date, officers were called to the Mattis North Apartments on North Mattis Avenue, where a 16-year-old reported he had arrived to pick up a friend when he was approached by a person he recognized as Savion. The teen said Savion put his arms around him, pulled out a black and green handgun, and pointed it at him. He then allegedly went through the teen's pockets and took $500. The victim told police he had just cashed his paycheck and showed police a copy of it. Based on the description the teen gave and the first name he supplied, police put together a photo array and the victim identified Adorno as the man who robbed him. An arrest warrant was issued in late August. Armed robbery is a Class X felony carrying a mandatory prison term of between 6 and 30 years upon conviction. Aggravated robbery is a Class 1 felony carrying a potential penalties between probation and 4 to 15 years in prison. Judge John Kennedy left Adorno's bond at the $200,000 set when the warrant was issued. Adorno asked for a public defender and a probable cause hearing and was told to be back in court October 24th. He was ordered to have no contact with the victim. And with the Allerton Public Library, plaque installation completes site, Monticello. 3 years after the new Allerton Public Library building opened up on the west side of Monticello, one final installation officially completes the structure. A bronze plaque now greets patrons in the entryway with a rendering of Max Edwin Hensey, the philanthropist whose $3 million donation made the new building possible. His will donated a majority of the Henry estate to the Allerton Public Library and the Henry Louis Mencken House in Baltimore. The plaque says, in recognition of Max Edwin Hensey, whose generous donation made the possibility of this library a reality. It also notes the August 22, 2016, day the new library opened. Library Director Lisa Winters said it was not an item that was forgotten, just that it took a while to find a contractor to install it. And that was written by Steve Hoffman of the Piatt County Journal-Republican. And we'll take a short break now and then return with the second half hour of the Friday, October 11th, 2019 edition of the News Gazette. I'm Sandra Ferguson. Please stay tuned.